I'm Janatara Begum, and I work in Operation Unite, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM WGXC. ACRA.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You have tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and we have all sorts of sounds and stories on today's WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear a little audio of the Release Aging People in Prison campaign's protest October 22nd at the Green Correctional Facility in Coxsackie, where a COVID-19 outbreak is taking place. We'll hear brand new music from Luke Stewart, Sharon Jones, Gordon Campbell, and USA is a Monster. And we also have discussion with local NAACP officials about voting. And we'll hear from the nurses at Albany Medical Center who are upset about the way they're being treated during the pandemic. Plus, we'll hear about last night's presidential debate from Public News Service and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And all the local news coming up next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is now open for your good full moon vibrations. The full moon is a time to celebrate, take stock, harvest, and practice self-care. The next full moon is on Halloween, also known as Samhain, marking the end of summer and recognizing the dark months to come, celebrating and visiting with our dead, and dressing up as monsters to scare the real ones away. Dial 518-302-6067 and leave your message for the full moon before October 28th. Share your good news. Favorite part of the summer, gratitude, wins, and celebrations. What has come to fruition? The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is standing by to collect your full moon messages for broadcast on October 31st. The number again is 518-302-6067.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Endless Garden in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Kate Lisa reports for the Johnson Newspaper Corporation about the election between incumbent Democrat Dee Dee Barrett and Republican Dean Michael for the 106th Assembly District that covers most of Columbia and Dutchess counties. Barrett has held the seat since March 2012, is 70, and lives in Claverick. Barrett says she is mostly focused on the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, in many important ways, the governor has done an excellent job, unquote, she said. Quote, I respect he has a game plan, but how we move forward with the budget and funding all the important parts of the state, I'm always open to that conversation, unquote. The Republican Michael is 59 and owns Hometown Premier Agency LLC Real Estate and Insurance Company in Pleasant Valley. Michael is against the bill that passed in the Assembly last year for giving the human papillomavirus vaccine to students. Quote, I was really concerned, unquote, Michael said. Quote, I feel that's a total violation of what this country was founded on, freedom of choice. I scratch my head in the direction we're going in, unquote. Read more about these candidates at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News is reporting that State Supreme Court Justice Maria Rosa ruled October 23rd there will be a polling location at Bard College this election day after all, a reversal of her own October 13th ruling. Rosa said the first decision was based on the argument made by a Republican election official that relocating a polling place so close to the election would cause confusion among voters. That position proved to be, quote, simply untrue, unquote, Rosa said when the Dutchess County Board of Elections announced on October 15th that two other voting sites in Red Hook were being moved. In her reversal, the judge wrote, quote, apparently there was and is time to move the polling place for District 5 in Red Hook, unquote. The ruling means the District 5 polling site will be in the Bertelsum Campus Center at Bard College in Annandale on Hudson instead of at the Episcopal Church of St. John the Evangelist on River Road, about 1.5 miles south of the college. The recent rulings arose from a lawsuit filed by the Andrew Goodman Foundation, the student group Election at Bard, student Sadia Saba, Bard President Leon Botstein, and Bard Vice President for Student Affairs Aaron Cannon. Bard Executive Vice President Jonathan Becker praised the reversal, calling it a victory for youth voters and for the safety of all voters and poll workers in the district. County Republican Commissioner of Elections Eric Height disagreed, saying, quote, to move a polling place to a closed campus defies common sense, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Natasha Vaughn is reporting on the three-way race for the open seat in the 107th Assembly District. Libertarian candidate Charles Senrick, 62, grew up in East Skodak and has lived in the district for 24 years. He has been employed by New York State for 33 years, starting as a file clerk and later becoming a team leader in the Attorney General's office. Senrick attended Columbia and East Greenbush High Schools, SUNY Oneonta and SUNY Albany. For more than 25 years, he has been a special events and projects volunteer with the historic Cherry Hill House in Albany. He has also volunteered with the community hospice in Rensselaer County. Senrick believes some of the most important issues facing the district are environmental, citing the discovery of water contamination in Petersburg and Hoosick Falls, as well as Norlite's incineration of toxic fire extinguisher foam. Quote, I believe it's important to protect our water and our land. That's a big issue, unquote, Senrick said. Quote, a few years ago, we also had the possibility of a pipeline being put through this area. I believe the fossil fuel infrastructure is not a direction we want to be headed in, unquote. Incumbent Republican Jake Ashby was first elected to the Assembly in 2018. He grew up in Castleton and earned a bachelor's degree in occupational therapy from Keuka College. Ashby served 8 years in the Army Reserves. He completed combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and led a civil affairs team on a humanitarian mission to Malai, Africa. Ashby is a former instructor at Maria College and is now an occupational therapist in private practice. Quote, I think our experience set us apart. Having a background in healthcare, owning and operating a small business, working in a local college are all things that sets my team apart. I'm also a veteran and I've served in the military, unquote, Ashby said. He was elected to the Rensselaer County Legislature in 2017 and won a seat in the Assembly in the 2018 special election to fill the seat vacated by Steve McLaughlin. One of the most important issues facing the state is restoring balance and creating a working state legislature, Ashby said. It is imperative for the majority leaders in both houses to come together so all members can work on legislation, he said. Quote, the governor has a disproportionate amount of power right now, and we need to get back to work as a legislature in order to start functioning as a state again, unquote, Ashby said. Brittany Vogel is the Democratic candidate running for the 107th Assembly District. Quote, the reason I'm running is because working people aren't being represented, unquote, she said. Quote, we really need a balance in our system, in our government. I am really trying to do this to help people, unquote. Vogel, 28, lives in Brunswick. She was raised in Rotterdam. She graduated from Hudson Valley Community College with an associate degree, but could not go further with her formal education because she did not want to accumulate a large amount of student debt, a factor holding back many people of her generation, she said. At 23, Vogel started a nonprofit organization called Upstate Cakes for Kids, which makes birthday cakes for children living in poverty. She has worked in retail for 11 years and is now a manager of a grocery store in Kinderhook with about 120 employees. Vogel sees the public health crisis and the needed economic recovery as the most significant issues facing the district. She supports legislation that would protect against wage theft, protections for unions, and a $15 minimum wage. She also supports several bills aimed at improving public water, closing hazardous waste loopholes for oil and gas companies, and closing down the Dunn landfill in Rensselaer County. Vogel supports the New York Health Act, which would eliminate copays, deductibles, and premiums. Read more about all three candidates at HudsonValley360.com. And Columbia County Clerk Holly Tanner last week announced on Facebook that due to county furloughs, the Hudson Department of Motor Vehicles will be closed October 30th, Friday, November 13th, and Wednesday, November 25th. Of special note, the entire building will be closed on the 25th. In May, the Columbia County Board of Supervisors imposed a furlough program on county employees, including those in management roles, to offset some of the budget shortfall created by the pandemic. Quote, "My apologies for any inconvenience this is causing, but there was no other choice," unquote, Tanner wrote in her message. The office will also be closed on the union-negotiated holidays of Election Day, November 3rd, Veterans Day, November 11th, and Thanksgiving, November 26th and 27th. The county-mandated furloughs end in December, quote, "so hopefully that will even things out a bit," unquote, Tanner said. Quote, "I wish it could be another way, but I was really left with no other options. I appreciate your business and your understanding," unquote. The DMV office is seeing a lot of traffic. Social distancing is being enforced and masks are required. Tanner does not encourage anyone who feels uncomfortable coming to the office in person to reach out and call her at 518-828-3339. This has been the WGXC Local News. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Sunday with a high of just 47 and a low Sunday night of 36 with a 50% chance of rain overnight Sunday. There's a 60% chance of rain on Monday, mainly before 2 p.m. with mostly cloudy skies, a high of 48 and low around 39 Monday night. Tuesday, there's another chance of rain. This time, it's a 40% chance with a high of 46 and a low around 36. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Neva Wartell of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Now let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
I love books. Do you love books? Books are great. Read more books. Listen to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM. Hooray!
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Nico, and I live in Philmont, and I'm 10 years old.
I'm Lena, and I go to school at NC Smith, and I am also 10.
And we're here every week talking about books. Do you want to do it, Lena?
Books we love, books we hate, bookish things.
And we're usually joined by our friends Amelia, Mashuda, Fatia, and AJ, but they can't be here today. So We hope they have a good week and read lots of good books. And hopefully we'll get to hear all about them next week. And we also want to wish Fatia a very happy birthday. Yay. She's turning 7. Happy birthday, Fatia.
Happy birthday, Fatia.
We have a lot of October birthdays at the library, like a lot of our friends, staff, and library users that have birthdays in October. So happy birthday to all the October birthdays. Woo! What months are you both born in?
I was born in September.
June.
I'm June, too.
Coincidence.
So happy belated birthday to Nico.
Thank you.
Not too long ago. So we're going to talk about some books.
I'm saying and...
Is that a sibling?
Yes. Very eager to be part of this.
Aw, that's cute.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
What's your name?
Una.
Hi, Una. I'm Emily.
My birthday is February 21st.
Ah, February. Cool. Oh, then it's going to be February 21st, 2021 this year. So you're going to have 2121. That's pretty cool. Well, let's talk about some books. Maybe we could hear from Nico first, because we haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
So the book that I want to talk about is called The Battle for Crystal Castle. It's about, a mouse. Like, this book is based on, like, mice as humans. This looks like this. It's a library book.
There's a mouse. Oh, it's a Geronimo Stilton book.
Yes, it's a Geronimo Stilton book, except it's a special edition. It's from a special edition series called, like, the Kingdom of Fantasy, and it's about a mouse and who goes on a quest with the Queen of Fantasy's daughter, a dragon, a fox, a tortoise, a tiger, and a...
I reminded her of the tiger.
A protector. And they have to find the crown of the empire, which is located on the island of Seven Secrets. And they go on the quest to find the crown because the Empire of Fantasy, which is different from the Kingdom of Fantasy, is an evil wizard took over and he turned the island into a weird, swampy sort of meme place. And the people there, who lived there, used to be, nice, but then he turned them into some sort of, troll that could turn invisible. And they attack Crystal Castle, and that's when they go on the quest to find the Crown of the Empire to restore the Empire of Fantasy back to its former happiness.
Sounds very exciting. Lots of fun characters. I've never read Geronimo Stilton, but I've seen the inside of some of them. And I know they often have interesting storytelling where they use pictures instead of words. Does the one that you read, does that do that too?
Yeah, it has a little bit of that, but this is an example. There's this picture and he has some words written above his head.
Hmm.
Right there. Holy cheese. They use cheese in different
holy cheese.
Yes, it's sometimes it shows pictures and sometimes it's words and pictures.
Hi.
Do you have you read other books in that series?
Yeah.
Are they standalone stories or do they have a continuation? Do you have to read them in order? Or can you read them wherever?
I read them wherever, but sometimes it doesn't. A little bit of it is kind of a little strange to me because part of it is it kind of talks about the book that was before it, and it's kind of a spoiler alert, but yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. Lena, did you have a book you wanted to talk about?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. It's called The Scary States of America. And The story that I'm going to be talking about in that book is the one chapter where it's called My House is Bleeding. Basically, this woman was like showering or something like that. And like suddenly the house just started filling up with blood and stuff. And like they called the police, and the police like were like, how did you like find all the blood? And they're like, I don't know, the house just started bleeding. And a bunch of stuff leads up to you finding out how the house starts bleeding, but I'm not going to spoil it because, like, I guess you guys are just going to have to read it for yourself because, like, I'm not good at explaining stuff without spoiling it.
It's hard, especially with short stories.
Yeah.
Do you remember which state it was?
Actually, no, I don't remember which state it was.
Wasn't like I should stay away from that state, not go into any houses in that state because they might bleed. Seems gross. As much as scary, it's more gross, especially if you get it on you.
My sister just lost her tooth. Like, she didn't lose it, she yanked it out with a rubber band.
Wow.
Yeah, she has a very strong nerve.
There.
Whoa, yeah. There's no tooth where there once was one.
Yeah, and there was a lot of blood, and it stained one of her shirts.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I was just trying to get it wiggly.
Yeah.
But
it came right out?
Yeah, it popped out. Now my S's are a little different.
Well, someday you'll have a tooth that'll grow in.
Mm-hmm. It also wasn't ready to come out, so she's pulling us very close to as hard as she could.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, also, it was one of these, not these top, not the front teeth. It was one of
the front teeth.
Yeah.
The front teeth are baby.
Yeah, the top front teeth for her are baby teeth, so. Crazy.
Fun fact, I still have a baby tooth, even though I'm a grown-up.
That is my friend's mom.
Yeah, there was no adult tooth to push it out, so it's just there until it decides it wants to leave. Hopefully will be never. I don't want to lose any more teeth now that I've got all my grown-up ones. But it's been so long since I've lost a tooth, but I still feel like I have that like memory of what it feels like to have a tooth loose in your mouth and to be able to like touch the underside with your tongue, but it's still hanging in there. Have you, I forget, when do you stop losing teeth? I mean, I know there's wisdom teeth that usually get pulled, but like, have you both lost all your teeth that you're going to lose?
I don't think I lost all my teeth, but they're all still in my mouth.
They're all there.
I have only lost 8, but all 4 of these pointy teeth here.
I have more teeth than Nico.
No, you don't.
Not a competition. Who has the most teeth? That's cool. I'm glad the bleeding stopped.
Teeth.
You have 50 teeth?
You do not. Stop it.
We'll move on from teeth. I can mention a little bit about the books that I've been reading. And then I also have some new releases that I can share that just came in today, some of which I've been waiting for, and they took a little while to get here. But the book I've been reading most recently is a book for teens called We Are Not Free by Tracy Chi. And it tells the story of a group of teens that are second generation Japanese American citizens who are part of the mass incarceration during World War II, where Japanese American citizens were sent to camps during the war. And so it tells the story of that period of time and different experiences that different people had. And so there's 14 teens in the story, and each chapter focuses on one of the teens, although their lives interact. So you might meet a teen in chapter 1 that later you see in other chapters, but it keeps changing from teen to teen, but it goes through the timeline in order. So it's not, the story is continuing to move along the timeline, but by introducing new characters along the way where you hear more about their personal experiences. And it was very interesting. I read another book recently that was about these camps as well, that was a comic book or a graphic novel that was also very good, called Displacement. But I'm really enjoying this book. I haven't finished it yet. Been listening to the audiobook, which is a very good recording and has different actors voicing different characters. And sadly, my audiobook loan ran out. And with the audiobook downloads, they just kind of disappear when they're due. And so now I have to wait for it to be available again to finish the book. So I'm hoping that comes in soon. Otherwise, I'll just switch to the print book because I don't want to wait too long. But in the meantime, I've started reading a book that I mentioned on last week's show called The Voting Booth by Brandi Colbert, which is about a young man and a young woman. And it's told from both of their perspectives, who connect on election day when she's like an advocate, an activist for voting rights and voting in the election, trying to get out the vote. And she meets a young man at the polls who she's never met before. And he's having trouble voting. And so she kind of has this mission to like figure out how to get him to be able to vote in the election. And there's other stuff that happens along the way. But so far, it's very good. That's why what I'm reading while I'm waiting for We Are Not Free to be free again. Let's see. I got a nice shipment of books today for kids and teens. And so I thought I'd share some of those. One of them is Class Act by Jerry Craft, which is a follow-up to New Kid, which he won a Newbery Medal for. And I think Lena read that, right?
Yeah, I read that one.
It's so good. So I can read the description for this one. So this is a comic book. Eighth grader Drew Ellis is no stranger to the saying, you have to work twice as hard to be just as good. His grandmother has told him that his entire life, but lately he's been wondering, even if he works 10 times as hard, will he ever have the same opportunities that his privileged classmates at the prestigious Riverdale Academy Day School take for granted? To make matters worse, Drew begins to feel as if his good friend Liam might be one of those privileged kids. He wants to pretend like everything is fine, but it's hard not to withdraw. And even their mutual friend, Jordan, doesn't know how to keep the group together. As the pressures mount and he starts to feel more isolated than ever, will Drew find a way to bridge the divide so he and his friends can truly see and accept each other? And most important, will he finally be able to accept himself? If I'm remembering correctly, I'm pretty sure the Jordan that they mention in that description is the main character of New Kid. That name seems familiar.
Yeah.
That seems very good. There's also another graphic novel called Twins by Varian Johnson and Shannon Wright that just came out. And here's the description. It says, being a twin means having a best friend forever, right? Maureen and Francine Carter are twins and best friends. They participate in the same clubs, enjoy the same foods, and are partners on all their school projects. But just before the girls start sixth grade, Francine becomes Fran, a girl who wants to join the chorus, run for class president, and dress in fashionable outfits that set her apart from Maureen, a girl who seems happy to share only two classes with her sister. Maureen and Francine are growing apart, and there's nothing Maureen can do to stop it. Are sisters really forever, or will middle school change things for good? I'm very excited to read this one. It sounds really great. I've said this before on the radio, but I think there's just an amazing assortment of middle grade graphic novels. I've been really enjoying them in the past couple years. Okay, the next one I have is not a graphic novel, also a middle grade novel, and it's by Ellen Hopkins, and it's her first middle grade novel in verse. She writes primarily for teens. All of her novels are in verse, and she also writes some for adults, but this is her first middle grade. It's called Closer to Nowhere, and here's the description. Hannah and Calvin might be family, but Hannah wishes they weren't. Her cousin Cal is a teller of half-truths and tall tales who pranks Hannah constantly, and he seems to be the reason her parents have been fighting more and more. Hannah's mom tells her she has to be patient with Cal, that after his mom died and his dad went to jail, Cal needs them. But Cal moving in has turned Hannah's world upside down. And Cal, he just wants to fit in and finally feel safe. But it's tricky. He can't always control his reactions. He has frequent meltdowns, and telling the truth about his past feels risky. He also misses his mother desperately and worries about the looming threat of his father taking him away from the first real home he's ever had. As tensions build, both at home and school, the two cousins will have to find a way to give the other a second chance and hear each other out if they want to heal their family scars. That's Closer to Nowhere by Ellen Hopkins. And I love a good novel in verse. I don't read them often enough, but it's a format that I really like. And the next book I wanted to share is a book for teens that is also a novel in verse. And this one is called Apple Skin to the Core. It's by Eric Gansworth. And here's the description. The term apple is a slur in Native communities across the country. It's for someone supposedly red on the outside, white on the inside. Eric Gansworth is telling his story in Apple, Skin to the Core, the story of his family, of Onondaga among Tuscaroras, of Native folks everywhere. From the horrible legacy of the government boarding schools to a boy watching his siblings leave and return and leave again, to a young man fighting to be an artist who straddles two worlds. Eric shatters that slur and reclaims it in verse and prose, an imagery that truly lives up to the word heartbreaking. I'm very excited to read this one. I've heard very good things about Eric Gansworth's novels, and I've never gotten around to reading them. And this one was actually long listed for the National Book Award for Young People's Literature. I don't think it made the final list, but I've been keeping my eye out for that one. So I'm glad that's finally here. There's also a new graphic novel adaptation of Jason Reynolds' Long Way Down, which has art by Danica Novgorodov, which we've talked about on the show before, but we finally got that in. And it looks beautiful. I'm excited to check that out someday. I've already read the novel that it's based on, but it's always interesting to see an adaptation to graphic novel form. And then I have not read any books in these series, so I can't really talk about the series, but Rick Riordan's The Trials of Apollo, Book 5, The Tower of Nero, is out. I know that's a very popular series. And then the second book in the Tristan Strong Destroys the World series, or Tristan Strong series, called Tristan Strong Destroys the World, which is by Kwame Mabalia. It's one of the Rick Riordan Presents books. And I know the first one was very popular. So for fans of that series and fans of Trials of Apollo, you can check out the new books in those series. So those are a few of the new ones that we just got in. So if you're out there listening and are excited about any of those, you can place your holds and borrow it from the library. And that's what I have to share today, but we have Nico's sister wants to share a book. This is her first time on the radio with us, so we'd love to hear from her. So Una, can you just say hi to everyone listening and maybe tell them how old you are?
Hi, I'm 6. My name's Una.
Welcome. And you wanted to talk with us about a book?
My book is called The Fairy Tales. That's what it's about.
Can you tell us who it's by, Nico?
Oh, it's by... is it okay if I access to you? Because I cannot pronounce the last name, and I was wondering if you can.
Yeah, hold it up, and I'll try. It is by, oh yeah, that is hard. It's by maybe John Piankowski?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying it right, but.
it's a collection of fairy tales.
Oh, cool. What do you like about it, Una?
I just like there's like a bunch of pictures. Mm. Because I can't read yet.
But you can read the pictures, huh? Do you have a favorite picture in the book?
No.
You like them all?
Should I tell the name of the book? Of the story?
Sure.
It's called Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, it's a great one. Do you want to tell us what it's about?
Tell us what it's about. It's about a mother, and she... tries to like lead her children into the forest, but Hansel and Gretel are staying awake, and they can hear their mother. And Hansel says to Gretel that she doesn't have to worry, and then he goes over and fills his pockets with stones at the bottom of the steps, and in the morning their mother gives them each a crust of bread, and they walk off into the woods. And she said they'll get Hansel and Gretel, and
find them. And the next day, their mother and father did not. But Hansel had put the stones, so they followed the stones back home. And then the next day, their mother left them deeper into the woods. And Hansel this time sprinkled his crust of bread. But the birds flew down and ate the crumbs of the bread. So they just went walking straight, and that led them deeper into the forest. So then they came to a little hut, and Gretel said, "Hey, look, Hansel, there's a spot where we can eat." Because the little hut was made out of candy. So obviously they went over and ate because they were very hungry. And they went over, and Hansel took some of the roof off, and Gretel took some of the window off. And Gretel then took a whole window out, and Hansel took a big piece of the roof, and they started munching on it. And the owner of the house was a witch, and she came out and said, "Who's Mitch munching on my house?" But the witch couldn't see, so she could just like smell really good. And yeah, that's it.
That's it. It ends on a cliffhanger like that.
Mm-hmm. There's more to it, but I don't really have time to say it.
Okay, we'll have to read it to find out how it ends. For those who haven't heard Hansel and Gretel before,
it's like at the end the witch like locks Hansel in a cage and Gretel saves his life because she puts the witch in the fire because the witch is thinking that she was thinking to herself, if I tell Gretel to check how hot it is, she might get just let her go in, she'll just get burned. And Gretel knew that she was going to do that. And Gretel said, "I don't know how to do it. Can you show me?" So the witch stuck her head in the oven, and Gretel gave a big push for her, and the witch fell into the fire, and she locked the door behind her, and she took Hansel out of the cage.
Yeah. I know we're supposed to root for Hansel and Gretel in the story, but I always feel a little bad for the witch, even though she has some moments where she's not very nice.
Yeah.
But if somebody tried to eat my house and like ruin my house, I'd be pretty upset too. I wouldn't put them in a cage, but
yeah.
You probably shouldn't eat somebody's house.
I guess if you're starving,
you've got to, but
I can show you the picture of the house.
It's a beautiful drawing. For those listening that can't see the picture, there's a lot of like
black
and white cutout looking art with some colors too, but very pretty.
And then here, I'll show you a picture of the witch. See like that.
Yeah, this is very like, it looks like the artist was inspired by this artist named Arthur Rackham, who did a lot of, it looks like cut paper, like it's just black and white.
Yeah, this is a picture of a witch. She's like long fingernails and like that.
She's got some cool hair.
Yeah, it's like twisty, curly. And then Hansel just gives her a bone because she wants to feel his finger.
Oh yeah, I forgot that part.
If he's getting fatter.
Oh yeah, because she's trying to plump him up.
Yeah.
I forgot. I haven't heard the story in a while.
Yeah.
There's also
one called The Sleeping Beauty, and then one called Snow White, and one called Cinderella.
That's nice. It has a whole bunch of fairy tales.
And then Hansel and Gretel.
Excellent. Seems like a nice collection.
Yeah. I also have a bunch of fairy books too.
Well, thanks so much for sharing, Una.
Maybe I can share it too. Bye. Next time. Bye.
Bye. Hi, Una. And we're actually just about out of time for today. So we're going to say goodbye to all of our listeners. But we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Bye. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near, the rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. So come on, join in, everybody. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is sure to come your way when you're in love to stay. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together. Brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near, the rain goes, disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine. My life is sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. So come on, join in, everybody. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Everything that's wonderful is sure to come your way.
The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is now open for your good full moon vibrations. The full moon is a time to celebrate, take stock, harvest, and practice self-care. The next full moon is on Halloween, also known as Samhain, marking the end of summer and recognizing the dark months to come, celebrating and visiting with our dead, and dressing up as monsters to scare the real ones away. Dial 518-302-6067 and leave your message for the full moon before October 28th. Share your good news, favorite part of the summer, gratitude, wins, and celebrations. What has come to fruition? The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is standing by to collect your full moon messages for broadcast on October 31st. The number again is 518-302-6067.
If you didn't remember, don't forget to vote. Voting begins Saturday, October 24th. There's an early voting site in Catskill for Greene County folks, and at the Greene County Office Building, and in Hudson at the Board of Supervisors Building. There's also one for Columbia County residents.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
Under Governor Andrew Cuomo's leadership, New York State has made a habit of refusing to release important pandemic data, from nursing home fatalities to PPE stockpiling. In its latest transparency fail, the Cuomo administration won't release data on usage of the state's new COVID-19 smartphone app, the Times Union reports. Meanwhile, state officials in Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey, where similar contact tracing apps have been rolled out, are sharing data or making plans to do so. Times Union reporters are clearly getting tired of having their freedom of information request delayed and denied. Quote, "The Cuomo administration's unwillingness to share the public data is part of a pattern by the governor's office on releasing data during the ongoing public health crisis," unquote, they write. In an October 15th event promoting his new book, Cuomo told Bravo TV producer Andy Cohen that the state might look at legalizing recreational marijuana to alleviate some of its budget crisis. Quote, "We need revenue, and we're going to be searching the cupboards for revenue, and I think that is going to put marijuana over the top," unquote, Cuomo said. For perspective, California brought in about $637 million in marijuana tax revenues in 2019. New York's budget hole for the 2020 fiscal year is somewhere north of $14 billion. Outbreaks in small areas of New York State, where Cuomo administration has deployed a new strategy of strict neighborhood-level restrictions to keep infections from spreading, are currently responsible for almost 50% of hospitalizations in the state, according to a press release from Cuomo's office on October 23rd. The most recent data on the microclusters where outbreaks are occurring shows that the areas in Broome, Steuben, and Chemung counties have higher positivity rates than outbreak neighborhoods in New York City and Rockland and Orange counties, where positivity rates have been falling. Overall, hospitalizations for COVID-19 in New York State are above 1,000 for the first time since June. New York State's new strategy for suppressing outbreaks treats urban and rural areas differently, with higher case count and positivity rate thresholds for taking action to stamp out outbreaks in more rural counties. State officials haven't said much about why New York is treating urban outbreaks as more dangerous than rural ones, but we'll note that there isn't a straightforward relationship between population density and COVID-19 transmission. Last month, Scientific American ran an interesting article delving into the complexity of the issue. Scientists are still getting a handle on the factors that drive community transmission, but things like the size of households and the interconnections between communities appear to be more important than raw population density in driving risk for rapid spread. In neighboring New Jersey, where cases are reaching levels not seen since May, officials are warning that much of the transmission is currently being driven by small private gatherings in people's homes. Quote, "The capacities that we believe are contributing to the bulk of the new cases are those gatherings that are beyond our ability to regulate and properly enforce," unquote, Governor Phil Murphy said recently. Early in the pandemic, rapid community transmission in New York City gave the rest of the state and the rest of the nation the impression that COVID-19 is a city problem. The opposite is now true. Rural cases have climbed to perilous heights across the country, and the rural rate of infection has surpassed the urban rate nationwide, the Daily Yonder reports. On October 23rd, the U.S. hit its highest case count of the pandemic. With cases now far more geographically spread out across the country, the nation is poised to enter the worst stretch of the pandemic yet, the Washington Post reports. The economic crisis caused by the pandemic has wiped out more jobs than the Great Depression and the Great Recession combined. In an effort to capture the human cost, the New York Times partnered with local news outlets on a project called Out of Work in America, featuring a dozen people from around the country who are struggling to stay afloat. Quote, "I feel like I'm on the cusp of losing everything. It's just pure frustration," unquote, 26-year-old Tucson sommelier Oscar Eligio Sanez said. Quote, "I've got past the point of desperation, past the point of anger, and I just feel hopeless. I feel lost," unquote. Researchers are watching how masks work in real time. An ingenious study from Carnegie Mellon used Facebook's huge reach to survey people across the country and found a strong correlation between lower levels of mask wearing and higher levels of active illness at the state level. In other mask news, universal mask wearing could save 130,000 lives in the U.S. by spring, researchers from the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation found in a study released October 23rd. Should we wipe down our groceries? Do we really need to quarantine library books? The best science we have on COVID-19 says probably not. Touching things like doorknobs and countertops is nowhere near as risky as breathing each other's air indoors. Wired weighed in this week on the great fomite freakout and how our worries about contaminated surfaces have misdirected our focus away from situations that are much more dangerous. Quote, "I think that one thing that has been tough about this pandemic is there has been such a strong initial message that gave people the wrong intuition," unquote, Princeton biologist Dylan Morris told the magazine. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued an approval on October 22nd for the use of remdesivir to treat COVID-19. Remdesivir is the first COVID-19 treatment to get a full, not emergency approval from the agency. Unfortunately, the drug is looking less effective than researchers initially hoped in light of recent data. Also at the FDA, regulators may be getting cold feet about issuing an emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 vaccine, STAT reports. The worry is that an emergency use authorization, a tool that the agency has used to fast-track the use of potential COVID-19 treatments before the agency has a full picture of their effectiveness, might put an early halt to vaccine trials. Quote, "The fear is that early authorization of vaccines could squander a one-time chance to determine how well the various vaccines work and which work best in whom," unquote, Helen Branswell writes. The agency is mulling the use of expanded access instead, a program that might stand a better chance of allowing trials to continue even while the vaccine is being administered. Local Congressperson Antonio Delgado, a Democrat representing New York's 19th district, is backing a bill that, with bipartisan support, that calls for a federal study on how to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in nursing homes. Nursing home infections have become an intensely political issue in New York State, where Governor Cuomo enacted and later rolled back a controversial policy directing nursing homes to take in COVID-19 positive residents, and where the state has refused to release data on how many nursing home residents have died in hospitals during the course of the pandemic. Early voting starts October 24th in New York State. You can find your early voting sites and all kinds of stuff on your Board of Elections website for each county. New York State also announced 8 additional companies in the state will start producing equipment and supplies to support New York's fight against the pandemic. The manufacturing will be supported by $4.9 million in grant funding from the state. 3 of the companies are in the Hudson Valley: Altor Safety, Georgia Brown, and Zile. 21 more bars and restaurants have had their liquor licenses suspended for, quote, egregious violations of coronavirus-related regulations, unquote. 3 are in the River's coverage area: El Nuevo Yomas Tavern in Port Chester, the La Batella Bar and Restaurant in Newburgh, and the La Bohemia Restaurant in Mount Vernon. Now the region-by-region roundup, starting with the Lower Hudson Valley, where Putnam County issued another public health alert for a possible COVID-19 exposure. It's third this week. Anyone who worked at or visited the Patterson Auto Body in Patterson on October 12th or to October 23rd may have been exposed. Some schools in East Ramapo will start hybrid learning on this Monday, October 26th, the district announced, but only those schools outside the red and yellow cluster enforcement zones. LoHUD.com writes that the decision to allow some students back into classrooms follows the revelation that nearly 40% of East Ramapo public school students were, quote, chronically absent, unquote, and another 15% were considered, quote, at risk, unquote. Westchester County Executive George Latimer's State of the County address delivered October 22nd was predictably heavy on the pandemic. Latimer recapped how the county had responded to the virus and reiterated recovery initiatives such as the Community Build Back Program and the Red Rent Help Project. He ended on an optimistic note, quote, "The state of our county is fierce," unquote, Latimer said, fierce. Mid-Hudson Valley, the number of active cases in Columbia County has nearly doubled in the past week. County health officials are worried about community spread. At the Ghent Assisted Living Facility on Route 66, 27 residents and 9 staffers have tested positive, and 16 staff members and 3 youth at the Columbia Girls Secure Center and Brookwood Secure Center, both in Claverick, have also tested positive. 10 of the staffers live outside Columbia County and are not counted in its official statistics. Quote, "Not only does this outbreak involve county residents, but there are also a significant number of out-of-county residents who have tested positive who went home at the end of their workday," unquote, said County Health Director Jack Mabb. Quote, "They stopped by the gas station, pharmacy, and the grocery store. They could very well have been contagious before they were actually tested. This is how the virus gets into the community," unquote. The Columbia County Department of Health will host 3 more COVID-19 testing clinics at the former John L. Edwards Primary School in Hudson. Those are from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on November 10th, November 17th, and December 1st. Pre-registration is not required. Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse said in his October 23rd briefing that at least 2 nursing homes in the county have active positive cases. In the Catskills, results are still coming in from widespread testing of state prison inmates in Greene County, where an outbreak has caused cases to spike dramatically. On Friday, October 23rd, 31 new positive cases were announced among inmates in the Greene Correctional Facility, Greene County health officials said on a social media post. There are currently 21 known active cases outside the prison in Greene County. Sullivan County is seeing a spike in cases. Known active cases in the county have jumped from the mid-30s earlier in the week to 60 as of October 23rd. The county also issued a potential exposure warning on October 22nd for the auto zone on Route 52 in Liberty. Sullivan County Public Health and BOCES officials will host a virtual Zoom forum for the local school community to ask questions about COVID-19, 6 p.m. November 4th. To ask a question, send an email to publichealth.forum@scboces.org. COVID-19 in Delaware County is on an uptick with 4 new cases reported on October 22nd and another 4 on October 23rd. The county currently has 16 known cases, 3 of whom are hospitalized. The Shire Pub in Delhi announced on Facebook on October 22nd that one of their employees tested positive, and that restaurant will be closed through the end of the month. Delaware County Public Health shared a post from the restaurant, but county officials have not included any warnings about possible public exposure at the restaurant in their recent press release. The 3 new cases were found in Schoharie County on October 22nd after a week with only 1 new case, according to New York State data. The Schoharie County Department of Health has not yet issued a release about the new case. And this has been the coronavirus report from the River Newsroom. Go to theRiverNewsroom.com for more information about anything in this report. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Welcome to Lifting Voices. I'm your host, Renee Powell, president of the NAACP Troy Branch. Today's topic is about voting in the upcoming election. In this segment, we will focus on the voting options. Our guest is Ms. Patricia Jordan. Ms. Jordan is a civic engagement chairperson for the NAACP Troy Branch. And I must do full disclosure here. Ms. Jordan and I are friends, and she has been a great friend. I've asked her to help me out, and she stepped right in and it's hit the ground running. Pat, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Renee. Thank you for asking me.
There's a lot of information to cover in preparation for the upcoming election. So let's get started with talking about the different options available to registered voters to participate in the general election. Now, I understand that there are 3 options to participating in the upcoming election, and those are the absentee ballot, the early voting, and voting at the polls. And I would like to cover what experience the registered voters should expect at each of these options. So, Pat, let's start with the absentee ballot.
Well, by now, voters who were planning to vote absentee should have requested from New York State Board of Elections their absentee ballot. The ballot will come to your home address. If you're a registered voter, it's going to come straight to your home address. And on the front of it, it will have your name and your contact information. Make sure when you sign your ballot, you sign it with the name that appears on the envelope. The return envelope will say, I am Patricia L. Jordan. So my absentee ballot, when I sign my ballot, should say Patricia L. Jordan. That helps to diffuse any possible confusion that there may be at when they look to check your signature. The ballot is going to come in one envelope. Inside there will be a second envelope and your ballot. In New York State, you must put the ballot inside the envelope, the protective envelope, and then into the return envelope. In the protective envelope, that's on the back of the protective envelope is what you sign with your name. So I will sign Patricia L. Jordan. Seal that up, put it in the return mail envelope, and make sure all the information is there, and put a stamp on it and mail it back to the Board of Elections.
Pat, I think that was very clear. And I'm hoping that those who are deciding to participate in that manner have a plan and have already executed their absentee ballot. Now, Pat, let me ask you this. If you vote absentee ballot, can you vote at the polls?
Actually, you can, but there's a quirk to that. New York State would prefer that you vote in person. So if you can vote in person, you should. If you have sent in your, if you've mailed in your absentee ballot and you've changed your position, you're no longer outside of your voting area, you don't think you're that afraid of COVID so that you think you should show up at the polls, show up at the poll and sign in. And it is incumbent on the Board of Election to check through those absentee ballots that they've received and to cancel out your absentee ballot. The vote is your in-person vote. That's the one that will count. There's one more thing. If you have an absentee ballot, you don't necessarily have to mail it in. You can take it to your polling place. You can take it to the Board of Election. you can take it to the early voting site, or you can take it to your regular polling place and turn it in. There should be a captain close to the door who will accept your absentee ballot as your ballot for this election.
So, Pat, would you say that if they haven't mailed their ballot by, say, October 25th, which is right around the corner, that they should take it to one of these sites?